Senate President Jeb Bradley out of the gate this morning. You're going to get some snow, it looks like, up in Wolfboro tomorrow and over the weekend. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, good morning, Jack. We got a little bit yesterday, too, so it looks like we will get some over the weekend.
All right. I always hit with you with something on a Friday morning, some bill or issue. Where do you want to start?
So, again, I mean, immigration is front and center. You know, the same day that, as you were just referencing, group of the illegal immigrants, migrants, aliens, whatever you want to call them, crashing the border in Texas, our Democratic colleagues are spending the day defending, you know, bail jumpers, drug dealers, even dead voters and illegal aliens, and trying to roll out the Welcome Act because they will not pass sanctuary cities. So that was what happened yesterday. So thankfully, the Senate did pass the sanctuary city bill, and, you know, we'll move forward with it.
What do you say?
That's the biggest thing.
Senator, what do you say to some of this, the Democrats yesterday who say, we are not here to solve the border crisis? Senator Whitley of Hopkinton, we are not Congress. We are not here to address the border crisis. That was an article in New Hampshire Journal. What do you say to that?
So, you know what? We can't fix what Joe Biden's mess is, okay? We can't do it. But what we can do is protect ourselves as much as possible from the mess that Joe Biden's created. And that's what we have to do. So, you know, sanctuary policies become a magnet for illegal border crossing and coming to a certain state. So, you know, while we're debating whether we should ban sanctuary policies, which are a magnet, in Massachusetts, which has sanctuary policies, yesterday, our counterparts in the Massachusetts Senate, we're debating an appropriation bill of $825 million to pay for illegals that are in Massachusetts. So if you want to bring illegal immigrants to a state, just adopt sanctuary policies. And that's what we're trying to stop. And,
Senator,
and I think, no, there couldn't be a clearer divide between ourselves and, you know, our Democratic colleagues.
Senator, it's Friday morning. I know we're getting a little bit of snow. I want to be inclusive and respectful. The term illegal bothers some. I think you should use the term undocumented.
You know what? Federal law says illegal aliens. That's the federal law. That's what they are.
No, the president said in the State of the Union, Democrat president, he had to dial it back. He had to dial it back when his own party, some got upset that he called the alleged murderer of Lincoln Riley an illegal. Hey, Senator, what do you say to Democrats? Some yesterday saying, we are not here to solve the border crisis. We are not Congress. What do you say to some Democrats going into this fall's gubernatorial election, state elections, national presidential election, that you Republicans, you Senator Bradley, you're just trying to make a big deal on illegal immigration and the border for election gain? It's not that big of a deal. What do you say to that?
I mean, it's a huge deal. Like I said, if you have sanctuary policies, you become a magnet for illegal aliens to come to your state. And we see it in state after state. Look no further than Massachusetts. As I said, debating yesterday an $825 million appropriation bill to pay for services for illegals. Do we want that in New Hampshire? Do we want fentanyl in New Hampshire? You know, the prospect of terrorism and higher crime. So, you know, people have seen with their own eyes what's happened in other states. Look no further than Georgia, where that nurse was killed by somebody who had been released out of New York because they have sanctuary policies. Sorry, that's a reality. And we're going to keep talking about those things.
All right, Senator, enjoy the snow. You probably go down to the former Bradley Hardware Shop in Wolfboro. I'll get another shovel since you already threw yours out for the season.
All right, Jack.
Thanks.
I'll I'll think about that. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Our own White House correspondent, John Decker, out of the gate this morning. John, he's had quite a week. He's probably going to get caught up in his sleep after the jet setting to Stockholm. I don't know if you bought a condo there. Talking about Apple on the legal side of things, they have a monopoly on smartphones. I'm a holdout. I'm one of those Android guys still.
Well, you're in the minority. 65% of Americans who own a smartphone own an iPhone. And what Apple does is it makes its iPhone compatible with a number of Apple products like the Apple Watch and, of course, its computers. That is problematic, according to the Department of Justice, because they block its competitors from being able to have their products hosted on these devices. It's monopolistic behavior. That's what the DOJ says, as well as 16 other states who've now sued Apple in an antitrust wide-ranging lawsuit that likely will take years to get resolved.
Yeah, interesting. Well, yeah, well, here we go. All right, John Decker, I'll let you get some rest on this Friday. Thank you, our own White House correspondent.
Thank you, Jack.
All right, going to bring in former number 87, University of New Hampshire, Wildcats, State Senator Lou D'Alessandro, one of the leading Democrats. Your colleague, Jeb Bradley, Republican Senate President, led off the show this morning talking sanctuary city debate yesterday in the state Senate. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Yeah, I say a long and arduous debate over sanctuary cities. Jeb and I debated the issue along with obviously another number of senators, but I think the key points, Jack, that have to be taken into consideration: the letter that most of the senators received from the police chiefs of the major cities in the state of New Hampshire that were against the bill because of the controversy that it could cause, the unwanted activity that has placed a burden on them that's much beyond what they're doing right now, and they got their hands full as we speak. And the local community, particularly Manchester, Eva Castillo was very adamant in her negative attitude with regard to this piece of legislation. People have worked very hard to do good integration in our cities and welcome the immigrant community so that they become part of the society, but have a level of trust with law enforcement, and that's awful hard to gain, and once you've gained it, you hate to lose it. This might be the precursor of losing that continual integration.
What was the outcome of the vote?
14-10, Jack.
Right along party lines?
Right along party lines, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Sure, excuse me, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say one of the Democrats saying, we are not here to solve the border crisis. We are not Congress. You're quoted in some of the articles as well. Senator Bradley responded. He pointed to Massachusetts. He said yesterday they were voting to pass $825 million in spending to take care of more migrants that have come into Massachusetts. He said sanctuary cities lead to a lot of problems. He said he's not backing down. He thinks it will be a big election issue this fall. Democrats saying Republicans are trying to make it an issue. I'll let you respond to all of the above.
Well, I think, first of all, I think Bradley's right. It is going to be an election issue, and election issues tend to be, you know, started at the bottom, but then they rise to the top. And what Massachusetts is doing, they've got a responsible legislature. They've got a responsible governor. They're doing what they think is right for Massachusetts. I mean, come on, we're not running Massachusetts. We're running New Hampshire, and we're trying to keep New Hampshire the way New Hampshire has always been. And I agree totally with Senator Bradley. It is going to be an election issue. It's been going on for at least the last 8 years. And you've had the Trump situation, you've had the Biden situation, you've had a Congress that's totally inactive, and headed by the Republicans. I mean, they got a speaker from Louisiana who really doesn't know a heck of a lot about Congress. I think, as a country, Jack, I think we're going through a very, very serious period from the international perspective, as well as from our local perspective. A lot on our plates that we have to deal with. And yeah, I think our local communities are trying to respond properly and are doing a good job. But look, this is not easy. This is not an easy solution. And we've always had, I think, the great spirit of taking care of one another. After all, you know, my grandparents were immigrants to this country.
Yeah.
Came across with nothing and survived hard work. And many of these people who immigrate to our country, and I say they got to immigrate legally, I understand that, but they become active members of the society.
Well, I think I'm not going to debate with you that many of the people are coming from very desperate, poor situations. They just want a better life. The problem is so many are coming across that we're being overwhelmed. Look at El Paso, Texas yesterday, the video of they're overpowering the border security there, and not all of them, not 100% of them are here to do good, obviously, when you hear stories of crime. Sure. So let me ask you this. You mentioned this fall's elections.
Yes. I
want to ask you, Cindy Warmington, Executive Counsel Joyce Craig, you know both of them well, and I think you've expressed support for Craig on the show past when I asked.
Yes.
But how do those two, how are they going to differentiate themselves? Because it is going to be a pretty good battle between the two of them. Well, how are they going to set, how do they, what's the difference in your mind? Give us a couple, or is there not much of a difference politically?
Well, I think from a base point, they're certainly not that much of a difference. You know, they're both women who have risen to really positions of power here in the state of New Hampshire. Cindy as an executive counselor, and Joyce is the mayor of the largest city in the state of New Hampshire. So I think it'll be a policy debate as to the management style. One has managed the city, managed the budget, and done things that affect a large segment of the population. On the other hand, Cindy's been on the council and has been in a reactionary mode in most of the time, because you don't get a chance to initiate anything as an executive counselor. I was an executive counselor for 6 years. So I think the big difference between the two right now is one has had a position of say management that managed a community, the largest city in the state of New Hampshire. The other has been in a reactionary mode to actions taken by the governor.
Well, last question for you. Do you think RFK Jr. will get on the ballot in New Hampshire this fall as an independent or not?
Well, if he does,
will he have an impact on the vote here?
Well, sure. I think because his name is a Kennedy, he'll have an impact, because there is a residual effect of having that name. But I just don't think he'll do the country any good. That's what I'm worried about. I'm sincerely, honestly worried, Jack, about his presence. The ad that they did in the Super Bowl, I don't know whether that was effective or ineffective. But, any third party, regardless. Remember Ross Perot?
Oh, yeah.
If it
weren't
for Ross Perot, we wouldn't have had Bill Clinton.
No, absolutely. All right, we're going to let you run on a Friday. Senator Liu, one of the leading Democrats
Thank
in the
you,
state
Jack.
Senate.
Happy Easter to you and your family. Stay happy, stay healthy, Jack. Have a great, great, great American day. And please keep smiling.
All right. Thank you. Kevin Landigan, New Hampshire Union Leader, Senior Political Reporter, joining us as a regular on Friday. Good Friday morning, Kevin.
Hey, Jack. How you doing?
Good. So we just had the classic framing on that Sanctuary City Senate debate and vote yesterday along party lines, passing to ban Sanctuary City policy. Senator Bradley fired up the Republican Senate president to kick off the show, saying it's needed. We don't want to become Massachusetts. The policy is bad of sanctuary cities. They don't know what to do with the folks they have in Massachusetts. It costs money. There's problems. Senator D'Alessandro saying, nope, it's not a problem. The police chiefs of our major cities were against it. So it's going to be an election issue, but right down political lines, right down the middle, Kevin.
Yeah, no, it is. There's no question about it. And I think what's happened in Massachusetts obviously has made it even not just closer to home, but more politically charged than this issue usually is here in New Hampshire, right? I mean, all sorts of cities in Massachusetts have had significant problems with illegal migrants coming in and demanding services and needing housing and getting assistance, and that's why their legislatures had to debate this huge aid package down there, and why Governor Maura Healey's kind of under the gun right now. I think one of the things that Democrats who oppose this bill aren't telling some of the ugly truth about this issue, Jack, and the reason is a lot of these local police chiefs who oppose this bill do so because the plain and simple matter is there are undocumented people living in this state now who are productive citizens, right? They came here illegally, They assimilated into the society. They're performing jobs that are essential in New Hampshire. And what this bill essentially does is that if ICE or any border enforcement agency has a detainer for an individual who is here illegally, then the local police have to assist them in doing that. And the local cops basically are saying many of these people, as I say, they're not committing crimes. They're performing essential jobs in the community. They're actually, many of them are active in the immigrant community, and they actually assist us in rooting out people who are here and committing crimes and need to be brought in. So the local police, basically, a number of these chiefs, including in Manchester and in Nashville, are saying this is going to hurt our ability to cooperatively work with the immigrant community.
Yeah.
That's clear. Why you have this debate. But there's no arguing with the fact that this is a huge crisis nationally, and it's going to affect every state in this election this November.
It is, and we're seeing this issue spill right into the state. I mean, one of the Democrats yesterday, Kevin, said, we're not Congress, we're not here to solve the border problem, but yet every state is. That's why Governor Sununu's been to Texas, he's sending the guard. You know, Kevin, why do I get the feeling that if you listen to radio, you know, after the primaries and the gubernatorial race and the Biden-Trump stuff here this fall, going into November, this is what we're going to hear. Millions, tens and tens of millions of dollars of out-of-state money. We don't have a U.S. Senate race, but the congressional race is gubernatorial, presidential. My Republican opponent, or, you know, whoever it is, favors a ban on abortion. My Republican opponent wants to ban abortion, over and over. And then on the other side, my Democrat opponent favors sanctuary cities and favors sanctuary cities. We're going to hear this like millions of dollars back and forth like a ping pong match.
It's true. We really are. And it really remains to be seen whether, as you know, this presidential election is going to be won by the 10% of people who haven't made up their mind about these two. And many of those 10%, by the way, don't like either one, and they're torn over who they're going to vote for. And are these wedge issues going to move that 10%, whether it's abortion, immigration? Is this what's going to move them in one direction or the other? At this point, it's hard to know whether it will be these issues will actually tip the scale or not, but it's going to be fascinating. I think what was interesting that the House yesterday dropped another hot potato right on Jeb Bradley's head, and that's the end of life care. This is the assisted suicide bill, which narrowly passed the House by 3 votes yesterday, and it was even closer than people thought it was going to be. This coalition they put together, bipartisan coalition in the House, really seemed to have a lot of momentum for this bill. There's 10 states in the District of Columbia where this is legal. But just in the last couple of weeks, a lot of the opposition has been building and organizing. You've got the New Hampshire Hospital Association against this bill. You've got the Brain Injury Association. The anti-abortion groups, Cornerstone Action, New Hampshire Right to Life, all against this bill, and much of the opposition really is about, not about what's in this bill, but rather what's happened in states that have adopted assisted suicide. It starts with a very narrow scope, and it's only about terminally ill adults, and they have to exercise their own request, and it has to be witnessed. And this bill is pretty carefully drawn, but facts are facts, and the facts are, in states that have adopted this, it has led to greater and greater expansion. So it's not only terminally ill, it's a disabled population. Then it becomes people who have chronic pain that just won't go away. And so these people get so, you know, it's so hard to carry on. Well, we ought to let them be allowed to take their own lives with this medication. And that's where a lot of this opposition is coming. This bill's got problems in the Senate. It really does. There's only one of the 24 state senators who agreed to co-sponsor it. Mm-hmm. And all the other Democrats, except this one, didn't sign on, and many of them were approached to sign on. So it'll be interesting to see how this debate goes in the Senate, but I think it's going to have trouble making it.
And then, of course, legalize pot for great, you know, recreationally. Right. That's coming, what, next month?
Right, it is. The House Finance Committee is still finalizing that. The Senator Daryl Abbas, the Salem Republican, came to the Finance Committee late last week and said, here's what we think can pass. It's not your bill. Here's the way we want it, but it remains to be seen whether the House will go along with this. It's really about who gets to sell recreational marijuana. And both sides now agree there should be a limited number of stores, only 15 stores. But how should those stores be organized? The Senate's proposal is, let's have franchises. In other words, let's have the Liquor Commission decide to award a franchise to a business to sell marijuana. The House side basically says, in states where you've had franchises, you basically have these large multi-state, almost international corporations come into your state, dominate the market, undercut the price at the retail level, and put all the smaller businesses out of business. Mm-hmm. So it becomes, you know what I mean? In other words, it becomes like almost like a McDonald's market for recreational marijuana that only the big corporation can sustain itself. And that's not exactly the New Hampshire way when it comes to small business and being able to, you know, start your own industry and make a success of yourself. So there's really right now a philosophical dispute between the House and Senate over how best to do this, and it may end up killing the bill. We'll see.
Yep. All right, Kevin, make it a good one. Enjoy a little bit of rain and snow. Kevin Landergan, New Hampshire Union Leader.
You too, Jack. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Brad Card, Card and Associates, one of our political analysts and all-stars, talking about a deal. As lawmakers, I love the news yesterday, work at breakneck speed to keep things funded. Take it away. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Jack. Good morning. Yeah, they got a deal finally. This is, you know, only 6 months later than it should be. But look, it's progress. It's not tremendously different from the place that Kevin McCarthy, when he was speaker, was taking the conference. But we all saw an awful lot of drama in between that over the last 6 months. So, this is not a perfect bill. Every time you do these big bills, there's a lot of stuff in there to be angry about. There's also a lot of actually pretty good stuff. I mean, stuff that I'm finally happy to see that Congress is recognizing the pay disparity for people in the military, and there's a 5.2% basic military pay increase over 20 years. There's a lot of things in this bill. I think it's really important that Congress put it past it, kind of close out FY 2025, since it is. Look at this. This is going back to last October, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to clear the decks. They've got to get back to some semblance of regular order. The only way to do that is to pass this bill and to get it through. People can say and joke and laugh and say, oh, who cares if we shut the government down? It's a big deal if we shut the government down. We are probably more dependent than we should be on our federal government, but that's just the reality of things. So a government shutdown is not the answer. And in my opinion, a government shutdown would be an abject failure of Republicans in the House to get a bill done. Now, you have the lunatics in the House going after the Speaker of the House because he's had to make some concessions. You know, they always said, you know, bringing legislation forward is like making sausage. And it is. It's not a pretty process. And you don't get everything you want. And, you know, we have a 2-seat majority, soon to be a 1-seat majority.
Right.
And anybody who thinks that they're going to get partisan priorities that are very partisan and you know, actually way more partisan than a lot of mainstream Republicans would like to see, then you're crazy.
Right.
It's just about living in reality. And you've got to live in reality. We have a very closely divided government. The Democrats control the Senate.
On that note, I want to go national for a moment, or we are national, Brad Card, but I want to talk about the presidential and the state elections coming up this fall. And we just had a lot of coverage this morning on this sanctuary city bill pertinent to New Hampshire and the Senate passing yesterday, but pretty emotional debate. And it was right down the middle, as you can imagine, Brad. But what I'm asking is I'm seeing a trend here, and I want to get your take on it. So the trend I'm seeing is the Democrats in the state Senate yesterday, a few of them quoted, Michael Graham had this, NH Journal and other outlets, I guess. We're not here to solve the border crisis in New Hampshire. We're not Congress. They say the Republicans are making more of the immigration and the messy, costly side of it than need be. The Democrats want to call illegal migrants or immigrants undocumented. You've seen these semantics play out. We saw the video yesterday in El Paso, Texas, of a group of migrants trying to come into the country, break into the country illegally, overpower the border security. So this is ongoing. Republicans say, for the most part, there are some Democrats, this is out of control. People care. They want accountability. We got to get a control on who's coming into this country. You know the debate. My question is, that's where this is going. It's already being framed. The Democrats are doubling down. They're not sort of changing their tune, going, "Hey, we got a problem here." They're doubling down. They want to call these folks undocumented. Don't use the term illegal. They don't think it's a problem, even in Massachusetts, if once in a while there's a violent crime or they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to house these folks and displace others. They don't care. They're doubling down. Republicans say it's a crisis. What about independent voters this next fall? Where are they going to weigh on that?
When you're explaining you're losing, and it is a little bit shocking for me, quite frankly, to have learned about New Hampshire's Democrats, because, you know, I think that there are certainly factions of the Democrat Party in New Hampshire that are completely out to lunch. But there are others that I think are relatively thoughtful, that I disagree with them on policy, but they're not wacky policies, and they're more, you know, quote-unquote moderate Democrats, if you will, in New Hampshire. People are not in favor of sanctuary cities. They're not. And for New Hampshire, in my opinion, New Hampshire politicians to kind of embrace sanctuary cities, well, congratulations, you're going to own what comes with it. And that's disorder, that's crime, it's a non-adherence to our policies, our current policies. And when we have people that are being given dates at the southwest border to come before their immigration hearings of 8 years, up to 10 years, that's a broken system.
Yeah.
And anybody knows that. That's why I've said many times that the southwest border, the immigration crisis that we're facing right now, is not number one issue. It's number one, two, and three issue. That's the reality, because it is forcing this. And I will tell you, I give Republicans credit for taking rather dramatic steps in bringing illegal immigrants to places like Martha's Vineyard and to take
you remember
them
that?
Away.
Because remember that?
What it does is it highlights the problem. And you have these very liberal city mayors.
I know. Brad, do you remember that? Do you remember that? Do you remember that? There was one representative on the island, and I forget her name. She was interviewed by the Boston media, and she was calling DeSantis and the governors who were sending these folks up, every name in the book. Oh, these awful, despicable men playing politics with people's lives. He sent 50 people to Martha's Vineyard. And what did they do? They have a community center in Martha's Vineyard, Brad. I remember this like it was yesterday. They bring the folks to the community center. She goes, they're going to get a good lunch and a good meal. So they bring in water bottles and box lunches. And then it's the first boat off the island. They were sent to the Air Force Base.
No, Jack, the reality is that this is not where it is. And you need
oh, my God, that was hilarious.
I was told how bad DeSantis was for doing that. And, you know, without any notice, he just sent them.
Oh, my goodness.
These illegal immigrants show up in our country, show up in our southwest border without any notice.
But not on Martha's Vineyard. Brad, what was the Caddyshack line? Sir, gambling is illegal at Bushwick. as he's about to make a bet. All right, Brad, good stuff. What happened to the Bruins?
A complete collapse. Mashian had a lousy game. I don't know what's wrong with him right now. I watched him. I don't think he played well. Swayman, quite frankly, has been getting lit up lately. Yeah. So I'm very concerns.
They'll bounce back. I want to get this. I want to get this big new guy that they got. What's his name? J-Dog? Perrone or whatever his name is. I want to get him in the lineup. All right, Brad Card. Pat Maroon. All right, Brad Card live. Make it a good Friday.
All right.
Here
you go.
Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio, national correspondent. If you have a quiet or more introverted personality, a shy personality, what are some of the best jobs out there? Aaron Rial takes it away.
There are a lot of them, actually. And it used to be the incorrect preconceived notion that, you know, only the extroverts got ahead because they put themselves out there and they did the stuff. Nope, not anymore. We know that hiring managers, managers in general, HR professionals, they love introverts because they sit quietly, they engage in creative thinking, and they get the job done. So if you are an introvert, you like meaningful interactions and autonomy, I'm going to give you the top five jobs in terms of annual salary. All of these make over $100,000 a year.
All right.
You ready, Jack?
Yeah, here we go.
Database architect, you're going to make 130 Gs a year. Software developer, actuary, information security analyst, and data scientist. Those are just the ones that pay the most. But then there's also jobs like video and film editing, graphic designer, digital designer. These are a little bit more on the creative set. While you won't come out of college making $100,000 a year, you get in with a good production house, you could.
Of course, J-Dog, he still wants to be like a ring announcer for the WWE. I don't know if that's going to happen, but maybe a manager, J-Dog. Like, who was it? Who were some of the great? Oh, who's the one who used to, J-Dog, who was not Lou Albano?
Captain Lou Albano.
No, the Grand
Bobby
Wizard.
Bobby the Brain Heenan.
The Grand Wizard, remember
yes,
him?
Yes, the Grand Wizard. He died the year I was born, by the way, so that's not a good idea.
All right. Aaron, we obviously News Radio National correspondent. Make it a good Friday. You getting any weather, as they say, in Connecticut tonight, tomorrow?
Just cold. Actually, tomorrow's going to be like a ton of rain. I think you're getting the snow. We're getting the rain.
All right. Thank you, Aaron.
Bye, guys.
Neil Levesque was gracious to host us over in his institute. And I found out, J-Dog, I never told you this because I know he's not on yet. Hint, hint. He has, like, hidden offices over in the Institute. He hides in them. So when Aaron Rial of NBC News was talking about inward, you know, quiet, shy people, that's Levesque. He's one of those. Well, you know what, J-Dog? When you're doing a three-hour show and flying the plane by yourself, it's nice to have a co-pilot like you, J-Dog. We go up. We pull away from the gate, get out on the tarmac. We fly just about like a Florida flight, which is appropriate with snow coming. Once in a while, it's nice to have a flight attendant or someone who cares about your show. Hey, Jack, do you need me to call in? Hey, Jack. And then Levesque, nothing. He's gone for like a month. I don't even know where he is. And then all of a sudden, he's like, hey, you need me today? Unbelievable. Neil Levesque, Executive Director, Institute of Politics. How are you, Neil?
Those offices are called bathrooms, by the way. But
No. I found one. He was in there. Do you ever see Mayberry RFD way back with Andy, the sheriff, and his feet were up napping? That was Levesque. The day of the primary, he's taking a little snooze. Okay, Neil. I got to hit
both
you.
Both of us did that day, by the way.
Yeah, but I was sick with
–
I was
always the longest days, and I used to go to the movies on those
I know, but no, hold on. I was sick with the primary. I always get a cough and a cold that lasts 5 weeks on the primary, and that's what I – hey, listen, I want to hit you with something since you've been, like, you know, under radar. So you had one of the biggest events you had in the last year there, arguably, was the No Labels event when you had Lieberman, Manchin. You couldn't even get a parking space, right?
It was packed. I had Manchin twice.
Okay. No Labels, no candidate. Lieberman told me on the show, we can go as late as Super Tuesday before we put a candidate up. Okay, when was Super Tuesday?
Yeah. I think what's happened now is that although, you know, a significant amount of Americans are unsatisfied by Biden and Trump as the nominees, the No Labels Party has failed, at least to this point, to really come up with a plan. And maybe that's because parties really haven't been successful as third-party people. And we've seen where, you know, Ross Perot did pretty well. I think he got 17%. And I know Michael Graham will probably fact-check that, but 17%.
Oh, you know what? You know, he listens to the show. Graham, wait a minute. Whoa.
And he ran as himself, not as a party ticket. He wasn't
right.
A ticket.
Graham's not always right, by the way, okay? He just usually is. All right. But I'm looking at this going, okay. I read an article the other day. Now, I get some time. It's Friday, Neil. Get some snow on the way, some rain and snow. Good stuff. Mother Nature. Maybe some high tides. Let's have some fun. Because you've been blowing me off for a couple weeks. You probably are a great sponsor. Sig Sauer probably taking a class over there for all I know. But so here's what I read an article the other day about Elon Musk. Stay with me on this. I don't know if he's going to bail Trump out with his bond, civil bond, but Musk, they just showed how the left side of our political aisle these days, the far left, the so-called regressive squad, that you know, they don't like Musk. Okay, even though he made EV electric vehicles cool, and he was talking. One thing they don't like is when he criticizes the national media for their subjective bias coverage. You know, it doesn't have to be. It's just they have an agenda, and he's talked about that. So I read this article the other day about him, and he pointed out he was talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Not that he's supporting him, but Kennedy's got this super PAC, right? And he's been to your campus, right? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You met him, right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Now, I don't know if he's going to get on the ballot here, but do you notice, Neil, not one national respected news outlet, not 60 Minutes, not CBS, not ABC, not NBC, has done the sit down or will sit down with him and his wife and say, okay, you're the son of the slain president, I mean, the nephew of Robert, your son of Robert and the son, the nephew of JFK, both your dad and your uncle assassinated. You've paid a terrible price, but you've been involved in public life. Why are you running for president? Tell us what's going on. You know, people criticize you on the vaccine stuff. Just talk. Just do the interview. Not one. And no coverage at all on how many ballots, how many states he could get on. And no coverage at all how the DNC is filing all these complaints with the SEC, the Federal Election Commission to keep Kennedy off the ballots. And we remember you know, you talk about Ross Perot. And some would say he's the reason Bill Clinton became a two-term president. So I'm just asking the question, forget no labels for a minute. Why the complete ignoring Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? Like, nothing to see here. Don't even talk. Don't even give him coverage. Don't give him credibility. He's crazy. He's nuts. Why?
Because they don't want to give them any coverage, because that would potentially take votes away from their side. And so the argument is whether or not national media outlets are biased. And the evidence that is factual is that for a while we had 4, 5, and 7, right, in New Hampshire. We had ABC, CBS, and NBC. And a lot of people, conservatives, were unhappy with the selection, and that's why when Fox was created, a lot of people drifted to Fox because they got more affirmation from Fox than they did from the other three networks. And, I mean, we could argue all day, and a lot of networks will say, well, we're not biased and all that. But, you know, there was a reason why Fox took off, and that is because those networks were perceived as being biased and didn't cover that. And you'll see Robert F. Kennedy is on Fox pretty often, actually, and that's the reason why. And, you know, the point is that everybody has sort of an axe to grind.
Yeah.
True. And all these news outlets, when they say that they're not, you know, biased or thing, it's one of the reasons I read 8 newspapers a day is because I want to get a different perspective.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, real quick.
By the way, you were right about the sponsor. So Sig Sauer, I've heard their commercials, and I said to myself, you know what? I want to see what this is all about. And I signed up for their classes, and I took their classes, and it was pretty funny because, you know, you're in classes with a lot of police officers and things like that, and they're like, why are you taking this class? And I said, I'm just here for fun. And it's
professional,
really interesting.
Professional?
It's really, really interesting.
Professional?
It was an armorer's class, so it wasn't a shooting class. And it was
but top-notch instructors, top-notch facility,
top-notch,
right?
Top-notch instructors.
Yeah.
And they know what they're doing. And it was just, you know, it's something I think as you get a little older, you want to try to experience different things that you're not.
Well, the other thing is, talk about
here in New Hampshire, these guys flew in from all over the country.
Yeah, but I know, and they are military support. But look at the facility they have at Pease in Portsmouth, Pease International Trade Port, employment, careers, incredible company. Hey, let me switch gears, Neil. Thank you. Okay, so And Matthew Bartlett, Darby Field Advisors, just sent in a note from yesterday, I guess, Chris Christie saying he could do the no labels thing. In other words, he could convince himself, I'm not surprised, to run. And that would be interesting because that might, you never know. It doesn't take Trump-based supporters away, but it could take independents. So this thing could get interesting and change, even though I think the national media wants it to be one thing, Biden and Trump, round two. But, Neil, let's talk about the state stuff. Yesterday, out of the gate this morning, we had Jeb Bradley and Lou D'Alessandro, Republican, really, and Democrat, you know, two of the lions in our state Senate, talking about the sanctuary city bill. 14 Republican state senators, 100% of them vote to ban sanctuary cities in New Hampshire, and all 10 Democrats vote not to. And the Democrats say, some of them yesterday, we're not here to solve the border crisis. We're not here to be Congress. And I hear over and over again from Democrats, they think Republicans are making too much of the immigration issue, too much of the border crisis. Call these people undocumented, not illegals. Democrats are doubling down. They think they're on the right side with independent voters of this issue going into this next fall's election. Are they?
Well, if you look at the data and the polling, they show that Biden is weakest on this issue, and it is a massive main concern of voters right now. It's only really slightly second to the economy, and it really encompasses the issues of crime and the rule of law, not just the words immigration. I think, you know, I've said before that I think it's a misnomer when pollsters asked about it. I think it's going to be a big one, and I think it's on voters' minds. And clearly, whether fair or not, the state Senate could pass anything they want, and it doesn't necessarily affect national immigration policy or border control policy. However, what they're doing is they're getting people on the record for how they feel, and they did that. And the state senators, Becky Whitley's comments most likely are going to be utilized in a campaign. And that both sides have done this before. I heard a member of Congress on the Republican side say one time on an issue that had nothing to do, I think it had to do with property taxes in New Hampshire. He said, it's not my job. And that was the issue that they used against him in the thing. So a lot of times voters don't necessarily say, well, that's a federal issue, not a state issue. It has nothing to do with it. If you feel like something on some issue and you express yourself on it, it's a way to contrast yourself with your opponent, and it's going to be used in this election. There's no doubt about it because immigration right now is so hot, and every time when you think maybe we'll switch gears to something else, there's a new picture that pops up or a new issue regarding
or
somebody hurting somebody or raping somebody. And
how about
Laura Healey, you know, gaffe is example number one.
Yep. How about the video yesterday, El Paso, Texas? The border folks literally overpowered by a mob of folks kind of breaking into El Paso from Juarez. And that video speaks volumes. Yeah, it's interesting. Go ahead.
I have all the television screens in front of me right here at the Institute of Politics, and they're on mute. And I have seen that video on Fox at least 30 times since I've been sitting here this morning. And it almost looks a little staged, by the way, but it doesn't really matter, right? Because everybody understands.
Yeah, well, I think I've seen elections in the past, and I'm looking at major cities, crime, homelessness, retailers pulling out, and you just look at the cities and these images. You don't have to go out of your way to see them. It's remarkable. I think some of this law and order stuff is going to be a bigger issue this fall than people think. I know Democrats want to make it all about abortion rights. They'll talk about how inflation's coming down. But if you look at the issues independent voters are going to look at, I think we're hitting on some of them. All right, Neil, make it a good week and enjoy the snow. I'm glad you enjoyed SIG. Neil Levesque, Institute of Politics, St. Anselm College. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Jack.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio, National Corps. I don't think Rory did that when he took his SATs. Good morning, Rory.
That was the real Bermuda short, wasn't it?
Oh, there you go. Fundraising, no one's talking about it. Biden, of course, is busy doing. He's more structured. Trump's trying to come up with money to meet a civil bond. But you know what? Donald Trump, all his elections, he's not your classic fundraiser. He just shows up and they already know who he is. But take it away, Rory.
Yeah, but you know, it's going to be an interesting election this time around because enthusiasm appears to be down. No one wants this repeat of Biden versus Trump again. So motivating voters, driving them out, knocking on doors, taking them to polling places, that's going to be expensive. And that may be an advantage come November, because right now the Biden team, they raised $21 million in the month of February. That compares to $10.9 million by the Trump campaign. Overall, the Biden team has about $155 million on hand, which is a record for them at this point in the election cycle. The Trump team is about half that amount, and a lot of their fundraising is getting derailed and going to pay off lawyers instead.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Rory, because some of our analysts, and of course we have some great ones because of New Hampshire's placement.
Sure.
Yeah, I was talking with them about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. if he gets on the ballot, but no labels now. I guess Chris Christie is turning up the rhetoric that, hey, I can be talked into this. If they want me to run, Chris Christie, I might run. So this election could be very interesting when it comes down to what the final picture is.
That would be an interesting mix. I mean, a lot of people have said no to no labels so far, so Christie wants it now. All right, we'll see.
But, you know, look at it's all pizza slices, Rory. It's all going to be independent voters. And if it's as close as I think it's going to be, every little percentage point, yeah, this could be a squeaker, and it probably will be, unless it's a one-sided blowout, but you never know. Rory O'Neill. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack. Have a good weekend.